today, OK Boomer, part two. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian and New Zealand perspective. Now, yesterday, Joe Wilkes and I made a post relating to OK Boomer, where we discussed the meme that's doing the rounds now, and in the context, of course, of the intergenerational issues between those older and those younger, the boomers and the millennials and other groups too. Now, this got quite a lot of chat on the post, and I just wanted to take it a bit further because overnight, the conversation posted about this very same thing. So they said that the OK Boomer tag could be seen perhaps as age discrimination. And it's really been a bit of a put down because Generation Zers and young millennials are using it to, quote, dismiss retrograde arguments made by baby boomers. And they said that's the generation of Americans who are currently 55 to 73 years old. Now, it's worth pausing just to get some definitions clear here. I guess there's probably no universal definitions, but the one I'm working with is that the age groups 28 to 46 are known as the silents. The 46 to the 1946 to 1965 group are the boomers, the baby boomers. So they were the ones that blossomed after the war, after austerity got essentially reversed into investment and growth. And then from 1965 to 1981, those born in those years are Generation X. And from 1981 to 1997, they are millennials. And those born after 1997 are known as Gen Z. Now, the conversation makes the point that it originated online and was fueling memes, Twitter feuds, and a flurry of commentary, but it's begun to migrate to real life. And in fact, earlier in the month, a New Zealand lawmaker lobbed the insult at an older legislator who had dismissed her argument about climate change.
In the year 2050, I will be 56 years old. Yet, right now, the average age of this 52nd Parliament is 49 years old. Okay, Boomer. Current political institutions have proven themselves incompetent of thinking outside of a short political term.
So, this term is now beginning to move into everyday use. And so the question is, if you start using OK Boomer at work, could you essentially be accused of age discrimination? And by the way, it's worth saying that some of the early conversations around OK Boomer were on TikTok. And here's an example, which may on one hand be amusing, but I think it also is quite pointed.
It's just a reality. You can't escape it. You can't fight it. Hell, even the hippies came to realize their society was not sustainable.
Now, of course, the real question is whether this is just a bit of good-hearted banter or whether there is something more serious here, insofar that, in a way, boomers benefited from the economic growth, from all of the stimulation that came after the Second World War, and had a very nice life as a result of that. But you could also argue, I think, that they've tended to pull the drawbridge up and made it harder for generations following to go the same path. And indeed today, many younger people are struggling with questions of how to get into the housing market, for example, or whether wage growth will be anything like it used to be. So I think it probably is true that the OK Boomer flag is more than just light-hearted banter. It's getting at something really quite critical, which is there are a bunch of intergenerational questions that we should be thinking about. And absolutely, climate change is one of the biggies, insofar that in 20, 30, 40 years' time, I won't be here, but younger people still will. So in a way, they'll be reaping the whirlwind based on generations of inactivity. And I think you could say the same too with regard to the financial sector, the amount of debt, and a whole bunch of other things too. And the conversation concludes that to millennials who've suffered through years of being called snowflakes by their elders, protests of age discrimination can be seen a bit rich. So, for example, why didn't Human Resources at Work ban all those jokes about millennials and avocado on toast? Now, I have a problem with putting people into categories based on when they were born. The fact is, many people will say that there is a natural migration as you age to move slightly more to the right, politically speaking, although in my case, I don't think that's necessarily true. And I know from my experience at university, there were a number of people who were young, but also extremely conservative in their views. So I think we have to be careful not to fall into the trap of just putting people into simple buckets based on age. But I also think it's important to understand the intergenerational dynamics that are at work here. Now, about a year ago, Joe Wilkes and I made a post on the DFA channel relating specifically to the ticking time bomb that baby boomers are facing. And I think it's worth looking at this post again because there are some very important messages there. So I'm going to play it pretty much in its entirety. Now, it's worth saying this was recorded before I had the green screen and some of the other tech that I now use. But nevertheless, I think the messages are pretty important and self-explanatory. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Martin.
Good to see you again. And I think we're going to explore a very important demographic time bomb today.
Yeah, I think it's something that I've been looking at, and obviously it's fairly common across the Western world. And it's something that I think could present a major issue in the housing market as we go through the next few years. And that is the, I suppose, the impact of the baby boomers on the property market and the debt market. I'm going to be quite serious, but I hope you'll have a few laughs as well. And we've got some stats and some analysis to share with people just to give a warning about the things that are on the horizon.
No, good. And of course, it's worth reflecting that over the last 20 to 25 years, a lot of people have made a lot of money by piling into the property sector and have the view that actually that's the magic pudding.
Yeah, and it's well, we've talked about it before, the press who sponsor this property hype, the banks who sell created money, I guess the challenges that we're seeing now within the economies where the debt burden has got too big for many, and whether the new entrants just simply can't go and enter the market at current prices. A lot of that is about the accumulation of credit. We talked about in a couple of posts, the Ireland versus New Zealand post, where you've had that exponential growth in money supply and household debt. And that is the only way that can be sustained is if you've got, say you've got 20 houses on the road, they're worth $1 million the minute the first one sells. What it means is that the next houses or the others, the expectations are of $1 million, but somebody at the entry point has got to take on that debt to sustain those levels. So for everybody on that house, the other 19 houses to be worth $1 million or £1 million, they've all got to take on that level of debt. In a rising market, they're constantly taking on more debt. We're reaching a point that we've probably hit maximum debt accumulation now.
Yeah, and there's a thing called the credit impulse, which is effectively not the total outstanding debt, but the trajectory of debt, right?
Absolutely.
And everybody is now talking about, and it's important to understand that as the credit impulse eases, that is directly linked then to home price falls and all of the stresses and strains that we're seeing. So you can still see credit rising, but if the rate of credit growth is easing, that's sufficient to kill the market.
Absolutely. And that's the reality of if 90 people take on credit this year rather than 100, it's that flattening of the curve. We've seen in the Western world the debt bomb rising exponentially. In the UK, it's plateaued. If you look at the Ireland graph that we showed the other day, they hit their maximum capacity 2011, and then it's largely flatlined since then. So, yes, the pace of credit growth is the key to sustaining the debt-fueled economies of the Western world. So, today what I wanted to do was to point out a few things that going to have a major impact, I think, over the next few years. People seem to forget that we've had, over the period of the last 70 years, periods where the population has spiked. Now, if you look at Australia, you can see that there's quite a big rise in population. So 2013 census data that we've got there, you can see this bulge in population of 55 to 65 year olds. And that is one of the reasons that the Australians over the last few years have increased the migration of 25 to 35 year olds within the economy to go and support the retirement promises that have been made to this baby boom generation. Now, I think if you look at what we've seen, is that many of the baby boomers, and you know, I'm going to have a little snipe at them here, because you know they have a go at the millennials eating avocado on toast, not being able to get on the property ladder. But what we forget is that these baby boomers, they grew up in the 60s and 70s. They were off at swinging parties. They were taking LSD. They were doing drugs. They weren't thinking about their future. Many of them did lose a lot of money in the 1987 crash when they thought, OK, we'll start saving in the 80s, having had all this fun in the 60s and 70s. They lost a lot of money. And I think, you know, my Australasian debt steeplechase yesterday, I think that is in itself, you know, it has been gambling that we've seen in property ever since. And what we seem to have got is that there's been an awful lot of people who, they're now, if you think about the 1950 birth year, that person today, 68, probably just coming out of the workforce. 1955, they're 62. And over the last 10 years or so, particularly in Australia and New Zealand, those are the people that have been fueling this credit binge. Having possibly paid off their mortgage in 2005, 2006, 2007, and people talk about, oh, we did it at 22% interest rates. And yes, but you're doing it on $25,000 worth of mortgage debt, which, you know, today that's not even a car loan. What they've done is they've then refinanced that house that the banks told them was worth $750,000, $800,000, taken a couple of hundred thousand out for the deposit on a buy-to-let, and then secured the funding against the family home. Now, if you look at New Zealand and their population stats, it's exactly the same. So we've got this big bulge in population of people who are now getting close to retirement. And my concerns are that all of these people, what they've been encouraged to do, and the policy of Australasia and Australasian governments, which is unique to here, because in the UK, in most of Europe, you're unable to go and negatively gear a property. Yes, you can claim interest back on a buy-to-let against the earnings from the property, but you can't claim back losses against your earnings as a, you know, as a worker. So we've now got this situation where a lot of these people, they've geared themselves up. They've had negatively geared mortgages on investment properties, which are huge mortgages in some instances, and they're able to fund that now. But if they hit retirement, these houses could all end up in the market over the next few years. The numbers could be quite astonishing, because negatively gearing is dangerous at the best of times. And it's been one of the things that has kept that credit growth going exponential over the last few years. But if you're stopping work, the likelihood is you're not going to be able to go and fund a negatively geared property, because you won't have the income to do it. So these people gambling on capital gains, they could present a major, major time bomb for the whole stability of the housing market.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And of course, we survey households in Australia, and we are looking at what we call the down traders. So they're the people you've just been talking about, with relatively large property portfolios now moving into that next stage of life. So, you know, thinking about retirement. And they are the ones more desperate to sell than anybody else.
And I'm not surprised, Martin. Yeah. I mean, I've got some data here from New Zealand, and in New Zealand's a really interesting country. It's different to Australia in terms of the makeup of who's got the mortgages. There are a lot of households in New Zealand who are fine. They don't have a mortgage, and from that regard, they'll see out whatever's coming over the next few years. They'll be able to ride it out. But there is a proportion of people within the country And the stats suggest 8% of the households are holding 40% of the mortgage debt. So that's quite a lot. And there was some research done in 2017, which talks about mortgages held by the over 55s. And those with mortgages in Auckland over the age of 55 in 2017, their average mortgage was still $393,229,000. In Christchurch, the over 55s with a mortgage still have an average mortgage debt of $221,778. In Wellington, the over 55s with a mortgage, $285,553. In Hamilton, it's $244,440. And in Dunedin, where house prices are much lower, the debt for the over 55 still carrying a mortgage is $164,701. Now, this is all fine in a market that's been going up. And a lot of people over the last few years, they would have held. So we'll hold fire. It's going to go up. I'll take another 50 grand. Actually, it's still going up. I'll take another 50 grand the year after. But actually, we are now seeing inventories rising very, very quickly in New Zealand. I pointed out the stats just in the last 6 weeks nationally. The availability of property gone from just over 32,000. It's now over 38,500. And my concern is that it is these people here who've left it late, who are now going to provide the massive increase in stock that is going to collapse the marketplace. To a degree that it really shouldn't have happened if they'd been more prudent in the 60s and 70s when they were at Woodstock. And now, sorry, Martin, I forget you're more baby boomer than I am.
I'm right in this bracket, but I don't have a mortgage.
Oh, good man. I don't either. it's something quite wrong. And just to sort of focus on Australia, in Australia, ING did a survey, and this is even more concerning. Those in the 65 to 80 age group who had a mortgage owed an average of $158,500 in 2016. That's a phenomenal amount of debt.
And I'll make the point there that what's one of the reasons why, when we look at our mortgage stress data, right, there are clearly pockets of stress amongst young growing families and, you know, the urban fringe. But there is a huge amount of mortgage stress in these older households.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe it. ING found in 2016 that 26% of 65 to 79-year-olds in Australia are still carrying investment property debt. With these, you know, these sorts of numbers, it's ludicrous. I can understand why they've done it, because you want to be able to provide for your retirement. Costs of nursing homes have gone up. The state care, we're not sure if it's going to be adequate. Prices are rising. Are we going to be able to fund the cruises and the holidays and all the spending that we do in cafes and supermarkets, and avocado and toast eating? But it has created, I think, a major issue now.
I agree. And if I look at the intention to transact, it's going up, right? And when you actually ask what's driving it, it's being driven by this fact that now prices are falling. So basically they're concerned that if they delay, they will actually end up getting less for that property. So there's a big pull forward. That's part of the reason why supply is rising.
Yeah, exactly. But the trouble is that they have been encouraged to do this, I had a little bit of a pop at the banks the other day and the ANZ adverts that we talked about and how I felt that they were preying on the young. So we've got the chief economist of BNZ spoiling the property market. It's a long clip. I don't expect people to watch the full thing, but our little minute hopefully will give you an idea. And after that, I'd just like to show a different clip from a Kiwi / Australian comedian from a few years ago and his comments on the banks, because at the moment I'm not crusading, but I'm I'm very concerned about how they have manipulated everybody and how they're now manipulating friends of mine and their children. And it's an important message.
And I'm not generally, I guess, a property investor. It's not what I do, but it sort of turned out okay. The first apartment I still hold. Why buy something in Auckland and sell it, I guess, is the message I've been giving for a number of years now. So that's rented out to the hotel, which occupy this building there. And this place I intend keeping for absolute eons, because I can't see anything other than Auckland house prices continuing to rise at unpredictable pace over the next few years. And what I've been inviting people to do, especially over the past 2 years, when they say Auckland is unaffordable, young people can't buy a house, when is the shortage going to be corrected? And my response has been, probably that shortage will be corrected at the same time as the shortage in London disappears as well. Because, of course, you know, although there's a slight difference between Auckland and London, and I don't say that so much in the rest of the country, you know, because they hate you, basically, in the rest of the country. Essentially, that's what it is, and that's one of the things I'm going to talk about up there. So if you're interested in that, maybe you can still find the listener from, like I say, about 3 weeks ago, and got a picture of me sitting at the bar there, and this interesting terminology. At the end of a day of hard work in Auckland, Tony goes to a bar, you know, as if I drink every night, which is not the case at all.
That's not the advice that an economist of a bank should be giving. A bank economist should be just purely talking about the numbers. There should be no emotion. There should be no agenda. If you watch the larger clip and people go and find it, you'll see that he's even talking about his forays into the property market. He's a very, very good speaker. He's a much better speaker than I am. But it has encouraged the late cycle baby boom. I've got to sort out my retirement to go and get into this bubble.
Thanks for your time.
Very good to be with you. Good evening.
Which bank are you with again?
That's correct, Brian. I've been with them for quite a while. Can answer any of your questions on that score.
Yeah, now you've put rates up again, haven't you?
Well, Brian, we don't have a lot of choice, do we?
Why not?
Well, there are only three things you can do with rates. You can put them up.
You can put them down.
Just a minute, Brian. Hadn't finished. Bear with me. Only three things you can do with rates, Brian. You can put them up, you can leave them where they are.
Or you can put them down.
I'm going to persist with this, Brian, until I get this out. There are three things you can do with rates. You can put them up, you can leave them where they are. Yeah. Or you can delay making a decision until you think that the overall financial atmosphere is more conducive to perhaps easing them in a non-downward direction over time.
That's three options.
It is, but you can eliminate two of them reasonably briskly. You're not going to put them down, are you?
Well, why not?
Brian, are you familiar with the way bank executives are paid, the system of bonuses and options and so on?
No, not really.
No, well, I think perhaps we'll talk about this when you're old enough to understand.
There's also been criticism of the banks this week, though, hasn't there?
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
Well, the government and the opposition have expressed misgivings about monetary policy.
Oh, I see. Criticism from outside the building.
Yes.
Criticism of banks from outside the banking industry. Oh, look, it's entirely possible. It's a jungle out there. I mean, we can't control everything.
But isn't there a debt crisis in this country?
A debt crisis? What's a debt crisis?
Well, right? People owe too much money.
People owe too much. That's very good, Brian.
Don't people owe so much that they can never pay it back?
You don't have to pay it back, Brian.
What are you talking about?
When people borrow money, they need to service the loan. You need to service debt. You don't need to repay it or you haven't got a loan at all.
What are they buying?
Oh, they buy houses and stuff to put in the houses and cars to park outside the front of the houses.
What does any of that produce?
Well, interest. I mean, that's how we make a living. I mean, we lend them the money, they service that debt, and that's how we make money.
But that's not the best use of the country's capital resources,
well,
is it?
Well, try telling them that. We don't tell them what to want, Brian. We just lend them the money to do it.
There's also been a good deal of talk about competition amongst the banks.
Well, it's said there isn't enough competition.
You were saying there is competition.
Well, there is competition among the banks, yes. There are quite a lot of us.
Well, there's four big banks.
Four. Four of us. Just excuse me. Hello. Yes, I'm doing it now. I'm just talking to him now. Are you watching? Yeah. No, I'll tell him. Yes, it's just cropped up. I'll tell him.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Who's that?
He runs one of the other banks. He agrees, Brian.
What, that there's strong competition?
Yep, they all agree. They're all around at his place. Fierce competition,
fierce
he
competition.
Said. Fierce, cutthroat competition among the banks.
Thanks for your time.
Oh, that's my pleasure, Brian. Now, excuse me. Can someone turn the lights on? I can't find my way out of here.
I just find it negligent. Since April 2017, if you look at Auckland, prices in Albany Heights are down 7.74%. Linfield prices are down 6.86%. Pine Hill prices are down 5.84%. Waitaru prices are down 5.54%. Gulflands down 5.53%, Newlyn down 5.41%, Totra Heights down 5.34%, Flatbush down 5.26%, Sunny Hills down 5.05%, Henderson Valley down 4.92%, and these figures have come from Stuff, who are Fairfax Media, and they're you know, quite a big publisher of news within New Zealand. So 2016, this advice has been given as gospel, and it is like going to an American church when you go to the full thing, and all I can see is that it has suckered a load of people who, yes, they had the equity that could be removed from their family home, and they have gone into this bubble. Those that bought up in Hobsonville, the investment property that I mentioned to you, on the block development, 1.25 million. They're now delighted. If somebody would just offer them 1.1 million, they're probably going to lose on that investment property. They'll have been losing money every week since they bought it, even with negative gearing. I don't know what their circumstances are, but if they are somebody who's approaching retirement, 65, 66, and their employer is about to say, thanks very much for all your hard work, off to the state pension, they've just completely changed their whole future. Yeah. And that it has been funneled by the banks. You can see I'm quite passionate about it. I just think that across the whole country, and I'm sure it's no different in Australia, and I know that there was a big article about brokers and the pushing of this across the whole country, we have exposed ourselves because of incredibly bad advice from people who should not have been, stick to economic forecasting, stop selling bloody debt.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree with you, and I'll just make two final points. The first is that whilst there was a positive wealth effect earlier on because people could feel they were getting richer as prices rise, right? The reverse is also true, that effectively as this will start to bite, the negative or the reverse of wealth effect, in other words, wealth shrinking, has a very significant broader economic impact. So not only do these people have an issue with the property and the debt, but they're going to spend less.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So there's a broader economic spillover into the economy. And it's the thing that people haven't got to understand yet, that the property market doesn't live in a vacuum. It is part of the overall economy. And governments around the world, including in New Zealand and Australia, have been betting the future of our economy on the growth in the housing sector. That is now turning to custard.
Yeah, and it's... You look at retirement. Most people, they do de-risk as they go into retirement. The same could occur in the stock market. You want the security of a fixed income. That's the time that you move your money over to term deposits and you stop speculating on 2,000 golden guineas debt steeplechase.
But then you open yourself to bail-in, deposit bail-in.
And that's the challenge.
Yeah,
that's the challenge.
And my second point was just going to be, think about the political implications of this too for the political parties, right? Because essentially the political parties have been preaching this for a generation, right? And of course a lot of older people tend to be a little bit more conservative and tend to therefore put their votes into the status quo. And yet now that whole structure is essentially now falling apart simply because of the fact that this wealth effect and the promise cannot be delivered.
No, well, they've had the voting block. You know, you look at the bulges on our population graphs for Australia and New Zealand, they've had that bulge for many years, and older people typically have tended to vote. If you look at New Zealand now, there's another bulge of people who have come into the country, and we've had over a million people arrive since 2006. Who are younger, they're in that 25 to 35 age bracket, they're the ones being asked to pay these ridiculous prices that the baby boomers have decided was the right thing to do. So, it's, for want of a better expression, a proper bugger's muddle, Martin.
Yeah, it's a pig's breakfast or a dog's breakfast. Sorry, I've got two dogs, but they will understand. It's a real dog's breakfast, right? And there's no simple way out. Right? Because the debt remains, even if the property prices fall, the debt remains, even if incomes fall, It's the debt bomb which is the problem.
Yeah, and it's the baby boomers' debt bomb.
Yeah. Joe, I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much. Very interesting
Thank
and
you.
Very important message. We'll talk
Thank
again
you,
soon.
I'm going to go off and have some avocado toast for breakfast.
Enjoy your breakfast.
Cheers. Take care.
Now let's just come back to the conversation, because that article was looking specifically at whether OK Boomers could be regarded as discriminatory. And the author, Elizabeth Tippett, an associate professor, School of Law at the University of Oregon, concluded that baby boomers might seem really powerful, and yes, they might be your boss's boss's boss, but older workers are more vulnerable than they seem. Older workers are expensive. By the time they've worked their way up the corporate ladder, their generous salaries start to weigh on the balance sheet, and management may have trouble envisioning spectacular growth and innovative ideas from them years into the future, even if they're ready and willing to deliver. And that's why, she says, Congress thought it was important to extend protections to these workers. It wanted employers to treat them as individuals who shouldn't be dismissed out of hand because of their age. And in many ways, that's what young people seem to want as well. A little respect for what they bring to the table. After all, the mem didn't make itself. And I think that's the point. So I would make a plea not to just simply fall into simple categorization and name throwing, but get into the issues and, very importantly, debate those issues, young to old, from an intergenerational standpoint. Because I think we will find that many people will discover common ground. Common ground around the finance system and how it's working. Common ground around the need to think differently about wages and wage growth and jobs. And even common ground, may I say, around climate change. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.